Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now we're in depth on the perilous weeks ahead for this new president. Morning coffee comes along with a big dollop of damage control in the White House these days. In the 60-some days that Donald Trump has been in office, rarely a week has gone by without some headline-grabbing controversy. At this hour, there's a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing opening in which the chairs of the committee have vowed an aggressive inquiry into Russians meddling in the American election process. We'll talk about the details of the congressional investigations. I also want to talk about the political implications for the president. Now, what should voters, whether they supported Trump's candidacy or not, be truly concerned about? And what comes next? Two guests to shape our conversation this morning. And I'd like to hear from you. If you are a Trump voter, how do you think the president is managing these challenges around the Russian intelligence probe, around health care, some of his other issues, and in general for everyone else, what kinds of questions about his agenda and controversies are worrying you most? So I'd like to hear from Trump voters this morning and Trump supporters, whether you think the president is managing these challenges around the Russian intelligence probe, his health care bill that went down, and some of the other issues, whether you think he's managing them well. 651-227-6000. And in general, for everybody else, what kinds of questions about his agenda and controversies worry you the most? Here's the other number, 800-242-2828. You can also reach me on Twitter at Carrie, KerriMPR. Amanda Turkle is with us. She's a Huffington Post senior political reporter, and she joins us from Washington. And Amanda, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Hurley is with us. He's a former CIA officer and currently the president of Team 3i, an international strategy company. And he's with us today from London. And Michael, good to have you back on the show.
Hi, Carrie. Good to be with you.
And Michael, I wonder if you have any more confidence in the Senate inquiry than you do in the House's probe. And we'll talk about some of the infighting that's happening on that committee. But what do you think that the Senate may get to that maybe the House won't?
I have a lot more confidence in the Senate probe. I think both the chairman, Richard Burr, and the ranking member, Senator Mark Warner, are approaching this in a bipartisan way, which is really, I think, what we need. The investigation into the Russian hacking and whether it, and its effect on our recent election, and I think is a tremendously serious issue. And it really, in my view, has to be approached in a bipartisan way. And I think that's what the two leaders of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, that's how they're approaching it.
Well, Michael, as has been noted, that's how the House started out, too, until it wasn't bipartisan.
Yeah, well, I think it got sidetracked on some issues. It seems like the Republicans on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence are focusing on leaking, which is a serious issue, of course. And they're taking their eye a little bit off the ball of what's really at issue here, which is the Russian hacking issue.
Yeah. I want to get more into the details of why, of just what we understand so far about Russian hacking. But Amanda, the New York Times called this Russian intelligence situation a, quote, murky imbroglio that will be further muddied by the actions of Republican House Intelligence Chair Devin Nunes. Will you explain why this trip over to the White House grounds to look at this intelligence has raised such an outcry?
Sure. Well, Devin Nunes is supposed to is the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and he's supposed to be, you know, nonpartisan. This should be a nonpartisan or bipartisan investigation. But the problem with what Nunes is doing is that he's making it look like there's collusion with the Trump administration. And the fact that this investigation into whether Russia played a role and what role it played in the 2016 election and whether anyone on the Trump team was involved in that, that's what's troubling about what Nunes is doing. He's a longtime Trump supporter. And so he went over. So, you know, Donald Trump made this accusation against President Obama,
right,
that he wiretapped him. And Nunes has said that he learned that Trump and his team were surveilled during the Obama administration. And we found out that he then went over to the White House to brief Trump on his findings before even telling the other members of his committee. And Trump used this sort of as vindication of his tweets, which, again, have been proven completely baseless. The intelligence agents have said that there is nothing to them. But the Trump administration seems to be using Nunes sort of as vindication and as validation. And, you know, what's sort of unfortunate is so much of the attention has shifted over to Nunes instead of these sort of conspiracy theories
well,
that
exactly.
Trump was putting forward.
Okay, so here's the thing I want to clear, though, Amanda. I mean, is it because there is this perception, as you say, that Trump is kind of manipulating Nunes and he's kind of falling for it? I mean, could Nunes have what if Nunes had invited the ranking Democrat on that committee to go over and see the intelligence, too? I mean, could he have avoided all of these claims that now he can no longer lead this committee because he's in the bag for Trump?
I think that could have helped, because here's what we don't know is we don't know who Nunes's source is on this. You know, Nunes said he had to go over to the White House to get this because he needed a secure location. But there are secure locations on Capitol Hill where he could have gotten the information, too. Again, he's head of the Intelligence Committee. And top White House official told Ryan Lizza at The New Yorker to keep an eye on what Nunes was doing, again, indicating that there was some sort of collusion between Nunes and the Trump administration. So, yes, Nunes, if he involved Democrats more, could have avoided some of this. But this could be that Nunes's source is not that independent and maybe someone in the White House. We just really don't know who this is.
Got it. So, Michael, if you put aside the politics of this for just a second, what are the most urgent questions for you that you want these committees, particularly the Senate committee, which you said you have confidence in, to discover, to explore?
Well, I think I think it's very important to uncover the extent of Russian hacking into our recent election. And it's important for a number of reasons, both its possible effect on that election, but also looking into the future. I think that's hugely important. Can Americans in the future, for future elections, have confidence in our electoral system that it won't be interfered with? And we're really being assaulted by cyber attacks every day. Our businesses, our intellectual property is being stolen. But our democratic institutions are also part of our infrastructure and a hugely important part of our republic and democracy. And so getting to the bottom of that and so that the public understands the full extent of that is very important. And then diving into the question of whether there was, and I say whether because we don't know the answer to this, any cooperation between persons involved in the Trump campaign and those in Russia that were interfering in our election.
Okay, so a question about what you just said. I mean, we've had the intelligence industry or intelligence operations in Washington tell us that there was interference by Russia. I mean, what is a committee going to do to, you know, confirm that we don't already know?
Well, so far what we know really is a summary that our intelligence leaders provided, I think, in early January. But there'll be a lot more detail to that. Some other information has leaked out, and some has kind of been hinted at by people involved in the two committees in Congress investigating this. And one of the things I think that's pretty startling and most Americans haven't focused on yet is the fact that Russia had over 1,000 what they call trolls that were focused on producing fake news, really, to insert into different websites around the United States, appearing as though they were coming from kind of American sources and that were pushing, you know, a particular message. So that's a pretty devastating bit of information. I'd like to make a comment on something Amanda said and pick up on it as well. And that's kind of the mistake, I believe, that Devin Nunes made in going to the White House alone.
Yeah.
As you know, Carrie, I served on the 9/11 Commission. Right. And during the course of that investigation, over a year and a half, we interviewed something like 1,500 or more witnesses. And we had an absolute rule that there had to be two staff members present for every interview, at least two members present. An interview could not take place just with one person doing the interview of a witness. And I think that added hugely to the credibility of the work that we did, because it wasn't information that was just being filtered through one person. And I think that's a huge mistake that Devin Nunes made, not including Adam Schiff, the ranking member of that committee.
You know, that's something that Senator Angus King of Maine, he's an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats, and he's on this intelligence committee that is convening right now. He was talking about that as well, this perception, how important this perception of impartiality is. He was also saying it's important that we know what the Russians are doing because we want Americans to be able to defend themselves just basically through transparency. So listen to how he put it.
The best defense is for the public to understand what's going on so they say, it's just the Russians again. So that is part of what our mission here is, to make the American people understand so they can say, oh, yeah, that's the Russians, because it's not going to stop, David. This is, you know, it doesn't end in November of 2016.
If the best defense is just to say, oh, it's the Russians, I mean, that's sort of alarming if we just have to come to a point where we expect that.
Well,
right?
We've got to do all the other things. We've got to have information, and we've got to be able to defend our networks and all of those kinds of things. But we also have to have people understand that this is just part of life.
Is that what we have to understand, Michael?
Well, I think we do need to understand that. But I really want to stress that this is, I think, a huge attack on our system and on our way of life. And it's really important to get to the bottom of it. And I think all our leaders in the White House and in Congress need to step up and put the resources that are required to find out the answers. I think it's really important to arrive at the truth here.
We're having a conversation, if you've just tuned in, with Amanda Turkle from Huffington Post and Michael Hurley, former CIA officer and now a current president of Team 3i, which is an international strategy company. We asked them to come in and talk to us this morning about the policies, the probes into the Russian hacking and Russian interference, and then the politics around this morning as the Senate Intelligence Committee convenes on Capitol Hill today. I'm asking you, as you listen to the conversation, if you were a Trump voter, how do you think the president is managing these challenges around these committee investigations and the allegations around what happened with the health care bill, maybe some of the other issues? And in general, for all of us, what kinds of questions about his agenda and these controversies are concerning you most? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at @CarrieMPR to Troy in Ask of Minnesota. Hey, Troy, thanks for waiting. What are you thinking about?
Well, there's a lot of stuff on there, I think, that, you know, a lot of people are missing as far as the probing of the... My reason why I didn't vote for Hillary is because of all the bad decisions she made. And then when she hit all those emails and then supposedly Russia did some hacking.
But Troy, what I'm asking is, where are your concerns now that Trump is the president around that? Okay. Yeah, specifically.
Well, the health care thing, to me, it's why are we trying to health care everybody? We should be health caring people that are in need of it, not these drugs, people that are doing drugs. And I heard on NPR it was these people that are doing heroin. And
That's the opioid. Troy, I think I'm going to pick up on something you were saying about health care here and go to Amanda and say, is what happened with the health care bill damaging to the rest of the president's agenda?
Yes, it absolutely is. I mean, Trump came in as this deal maker. That's how he sold himself, that he could come in and right away change Washington and just sit down at the table, sort of look sternly and make a deal. And that couldn't happen. And he tried to blame Democrats for the failure of the health care repeal bill. but he never reached out to any of the top Democratic leaders in Congress to try to work with them. It failed because he and House Speaker Paul Ryan couldn't get the party together. There were moderates who didn't like the repeal bill, and there were conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus who didn't like it. So far, Trump has been pretty bad at making deals. And this, what this does is it empowers the House Freedom Caucus, who now realizes that they have quite a bit of leverage. And it empowers Democrats, who know that if they stand together, they can resist the things that they don't like that Trump wants to do on tax reform or on infrastructure or these other priorities that are coming up on the budget and building the wall. And you saw Trump this morning actually tweet that the Freedom Caucus needs to cut it out so that they can move forward and oppose Democrats. So this is a big problem for Trump, and the health care repeal did not look good for the Republican Party.
You know, I'm confused about the conflicting messages here coming out of the White House about Democrats, Amanda, because it seems like in one breath the president says there are things on my agenda that I want and need Democrats for. And then in the next tweet, it's, come on, Freedom Caucus, band together so we can oppose the Democrats.
Yes, Trump is not known for his consistency, but you know he needs either the entire Republican Party to stand together because they do have a majority, or he needs Democrats. And on some things, he actually does need Democrats anyway. For example, in the Senate, Republicans have a majority, but they don't have 60 votes. So on certain things, they need to attract some Democrats, including, for example, getting his Supreme Court nominee confirmed, Neil Gorsuch. Unless Republicans change the rules, they need some Democrats to go along. So, you know, Trump has to try a different strategy if he, you know, if he can't get his party together and if he wants to move forward on some of his big agenda items.
Call here for you, Michael, from Christopher in St. Paul. And Christopher, what do you want to know?
Hi, I had a question. Hello, Michael. My question is real brief. Is there any evidence of actual vote rigging or vote tampering that may have affected the elections? And you, sir, from the intelligence agency would obviously know that better than I.
Okay. Michael?
Thanks.
Hi, Christopher. That's a very good question. And I think the leadership of the two committees looking into this question have unequivocally said that there is no evidence of actual tampering of voting machines. I think, as I recall, there was a little bit of a discussion of maybe an attempt or two that didn't get anywhere. So that's the good news. And so that, you know, no vote totals seem to have been changed around by Russian hacking. But at the same time, I think it's important to understand that there's ways elections can be influenced, obviously, without just changing votes in voting booths, for example, or the tabulation of them. The Russians mounted what appears to be a very extensive influence campaign to affect the election. And that's, I think, one of the things that's being looked at. As I consider the news of just the past couple of weeks, the biggest, most important bit of information for me anyway was at the House Intelligence Committee's hearing at which Mike Rogers, the head of NSA, and James Comey, the director of the FBI, appeared, in which Director Comey said that and revealed, I think, for the first time, at least formally, saying that there is an ongoing FBI investigation of possible, and I say possible, cooperation between some elements of the Trump campaign and the Russians involved in the hacking. That's a fact that's ongoing. A lot of the other stuff is really interesting, but it's sort of charge and countercharge and gets in the political area. But meantime, what we're seeing is kind of the FBI grinding away and just doing what it does, which is investigating what happened.
You know, Michael, what I wonder about is when I hear that the Russians are trying to interfere in the French election and some of the other elections in Europe— hasn't all of this attention, wouldn't you think that that would force the Russians back into retreat mode on this and wait until some of the heat dies down? Or is it really that blatant and they don't care who knows?
It's an interesting point, Carrie, and I think it may be that blatant and they don't care who knows. I think they're trying to sow seeds of disruption. And it's not just this year. It's been going on for quite a while. Putin's principal goal is to destabilize the European Union and NATO and kind of just kind of develop divisions and divisiveness in those important alliances. And that's really a key thing for him. So I think they're just going to keep turning more steam on, in a sense, to even do more damage and to affect these elections as much as possible. And I think that's the goal.
And just a quick note here, Michael, about what you just said about Putin's goals. I mean, the idea of that is that a divided West is a weaker West, and a less formidable adversary. Because isn't that how he sees the West, as adversarial?
That's right. And the West will be weaker. It will be lacking in leadership. It won't stand up to what Putin is trying to do, which is establish Russian power and expand it.
Wendy says on Twitter, "What troubles me is that if Trump's presidency goes down in history as a failure, he will always blame someone else. A warped worldview." Pretty early days here to be talking about that. But to the phones, to Gretchen in St. Paul. Hey, Gretchen, hi.
Hi. My question is, I'm wondering what Paul Ryan's role is in the Nunes going to the White House, because in his first news conference, he says he went to Paul Ryan first, then the president, and then the following news conferences, he never mentioned Paul Ryan's name again.
Okay. So, Amanda, have you heard that and understand a bit about that?
I don't actually know what Paul Ryan's role is. He's facing a lot of pressure to get rid of Nunes as the head of the House Intelligence Committee. You know, there have been calls for a while to hold some sort of independent investigation. But so far, Ryan has not done that. He's stood behind him. So I'm not sure exactly what is going on there. But that's now why we are talking more about the Senate, and we're seeing so much attention to shift to the Senate, because there are even some Republicans, Congressman Charlie Dent from Pennsylvania, who's known as more of a moderate, just said that he thinks that the Senate should be the one taking up the investigation, because even he has sort of lost some confidence in the supposedly bipartisan House intelligence investigation.
Amanda, I'm curious about what your takeaway is on the way Paul Ryan managed or didn't the Freedom Caucus during the health care debacle.
Well, the House Freedom Caucus has always been hard for people to manage, because we saw this with John Boehner when he was speaker, too. He couldn't really manage them. It's now evading Paul Ryan. I mean, he couldn't get it together. It just didn't look good for Republicans. I mean, Democrats, you know, they spent over a year doing health care repeal, and they made sure that they got all the people, you know, President Obama brought together people for a summit before they even introduced a bill. They made sure they had input from everyone, and for the most part, they had their entire caucus together. Republicans, instead, despite criticizing Democrats for rushing a bill, got a bill out, said that they want to pass it in a couple weeks, and didn't have the buy-in of their members, which is why this played out so publicly and was so embarrassing, because they didn't do it behind the scenes beforehand. They just put out the bill and then sort of threw their hands up to see what happened.
Well, Amanda, don't you think the very public nature of that is something that Ryan thought would bring pressure to bear on some of these recalcitrant members? I mean, wasn't that part of the strategy?
Wasn't a great strategy. I mean, you know, Republicans often criticize Nancy Pelosi, who's the Democratic leader in the House. But what she is very good at doing is knowing where her members are and knowing that before she puts out a bill. And so even if he thought that maybe there's some public pressure that could bear down on his members if this was public, he didn't do a great job of figuring out what that would be. I mean, you saw Trump try this, too. He put out this, sort of ultimatum that you need to vote on this tomorrow, and if it fails, I'm moving on. And Republicans in Congress simply said, fine. You
know, they kind of called his bluff.
We're not going to approve it, and you can move on. And they called his bluff.
Right.
And so now they have to move on.
Well, but now he's back to saying, let's figure out a way to get health care done, right? So they really did call his bluff.
We heard Congressman Steve Scalise from Louisiana say that they're closer than ever on repealing Obamacare. And I don't know what he knows that the rest of us don't know, but they don't seem closer than ever.
Michael, call for you here from Ted in St. Cloud. Hi, Ted. Your question or your thought about this?
Yeah, I have a thought. Well, I have several thoughts. One is that, you know, I don't think Donald Trump has an agenda. I think his agenda is being fed to him by the people he's surrounded himself by. And I think when he tried to repeal the Obamacare. Mm-hmm. I think Donald Trump has no negotiating ability.
Okay.
Donald Trump is used to giving orders and people jump, you know, and he don't know how to talk to people to get things done. He know how to demand people get things done. And I think that's his biggest problem. I think it's going to be his problem throughout his presidency.
Okay. I think this is a good point, and I'll go to Amanda on this too. But Michael, do you think Ted might have something there in the way that the president is interacting with his intelligence community, with some of his high-level advisors who may bring him information that doesn't necessarily fit with his worldview?
Well, that may be the case. I think that Donald Trump and his administration feels kind of besieged in a way. They have a view of the press that the press is highly negative and has been highly critical on everything that it's done. That's their perception. And he fights back. And one of the ways he fought back was to make this claim that President Obama ordered a wiretap of him during the campaign. And so that's the way he's struck back. But I think that this is just my opinion now that the intelligence community and the intelligence agencies are going to be very, very important. They are important, but they're going to be very important to deal with a very messy and dangerous world that we face today. The challenges are huge. A lot of our national security leaders have said over the last year that the danger that we face and the challenges we face are maybe the greatest that any of them can remember. General Clapper served in intelligence for 50 years, and that's certainly what he said and has said, kind of a warning. So the point is the president is going to need to have very good relations with the intelligence agencies because it's going to depend on their product to deal with these very, very serious challenges that we face. And I think he'll need to step up as a leader to try to pull this together and instill the confidence in those agencies so that they can all work together and keep the nation safe.
Yeah. So, Michael, this is why I wanted to hear you on this, because, of course, every president comes into office with beliefs or views on what the world is like and how dangerous it might be for the United States. But isn't part of this, you can have your worldview, but some of it is being receptive to the information that people who are steeped in this will bring you. And sometimes maybe that's going to challenge what you think you know about the world. That's what concerns me about the president, that he doesn't have that openness. Am I phrasing that right, or would you put that differently?
Well, I think any time there's a new president, there's a huge learning curve that they face. And it doesn't really matter what experience they have. They may have deep experience in a certain walk of life. But the presidency has unique challenges and problems, obviously. And so you really do need to surround yourself with experts and people that have spent their lifetime studying these important issues, especially in national security. And I think that President Trump certainly has done that with General Mattis at the Department of Defense and Rex Tillerson at the State Department and John Kelly at the Department of Homeland Security. But it is extremely important to develop, the ability to listen to people and to be open to that and to be able to change your mind. I think I'd say that for any president. I think it's hugely important.
Amanda, love your thoughts on that. What would you say?
Well, picking up more on this, Trump and the intelligence community, what is a little surprising about all of this and Nunes's role is that, you know, Trump is the president. He has access to, you know, quite a bit of intelligence, obviously.
Right.
And we heard his counselor, Kellyanne Conway, initially trying to defend Trump's tweets about Obama wiretapping him by saying, look, he's the president. He has access to more information and more intelligence than the rest of us do. You know, so why did he need Devin Nunes to get this information? Trump, if it's coming from somewhere in the executive branch, Trump could obviously get this himself and could back up his statements. But the fact remains that what Trump put forward is completely baseless, you know, has been rejected by the FBI, it's just been rejected by everyone. And so this is in many ways still serving as a distraction from the fact that Trump basically lied and put out a conspiracy theory with nothing to back him up and is now looking for cover.
Yeah. I guess, Amanda, I was asking, do you worry that there doesn't seem to be a level of curiosity about opposing views that I think is and I'd love your view on this, that I think seems to be an important quality for presidents, especially who are on that learning curve that Michael talked about?
Yes, Trump does not seem especially intellectually curious and about those opposing views. I mean, you're absolutely right. Trump is repeatedly put forward with facts that, you know, don't necessarily fit with what he wants to do. And he doesn't always, you know, he doesn't seem to accept them. And the intelligence community, you know, I think has been very frustrated. But, you know, if you're an intelligence agent, and we've seen many reports about this, it's very frustrating that you, you know, put in all this work.
Right.
You are doing this work for the president, and then what you put forward is simply rejected, and the president goes out and says something that you know you just presented him with information that says the opposite.
Right. Call here from Terry in White Bear Lake. Hey, Terry, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. What are you thinking about?
Well, I guess I'm just really disappointed in the entire administration, in his nominations, his constant chatter on Twitter. It just...
Did you vote for him, Terry? Did you vote for Trump, Terry?
Yes.
Okay. And so when you say you're disappointed in the people that he's nominated...
Well, it seems like he's nominated personal friends and wealthy men. It just seems, the whole thing just seems so un-American, unpresidential. I'm really disappointed.
I appreciate the call, and it sounds like you have a dog who needs a little attention there in the background. Conversation this morning with Michael Hurley. He's a former CIA officer, and Amanda Turkle of the Huffington Post, where she covers politics. As we get to some of the questions that will be asked in the Senate intelligence hearing that's actually going on right now on Capitol Hill, we talk about the policies about that, some of the more urgent questions, and the politics of this. These 60-some days of the Trump presidency. I'm asking you this morning, in general, what kinds of questions about the president's agenda and controversies concern you most when you think about this, when you think about the implications of it, particularly if you're a Trump voter? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. Latest news, and then right back to your calls and your questions to Phil Picardi now. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, Carrie. In the wake of Russia's largest outbreak of anti-government demonstrations in years, President Vladimir Putin says authorities will not be cowed by protesters or Western criticism. Police arrested hundreds of people Sunday in scores of unsanctioned protest rallies against government corruption. Putin's comments came this morning. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is in Turkey today. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the two stress the importance of working with right and legitimate actors in the fight against terrorism. Tillerson and Erdogan discussed potential joint steps in Iraq and Syria. The Vatican is urging President Trump to listen to dissenting voices and reconsider his position on climate change. The Vatican says the U.S. risks being supplanted by China as a leader in environmental protection. Pope Francis has made defense of the environment a key plank of his papacy. Malaysia says it has agreed to release the body of Kim Jong-nam to North Korea in exchange for the return of 9 Malaysians held at the North's capital. Relations between Malaysia and North Korea have been badly frayed by the murder of the North Korean leader's half-brother at Kuala Lumpur's airport. And the University of North Dakota is eliminating 3 sports to help meet budget cuts ordered by school president Mark Kennedy. UND athletic director Brian Faison says his department is cutting women's hockey and men's and women's swimming and diving. Kennedy ordered $1.3 million in cuts from athletics as part of an ongoing state budget crunch. The women's hockey program began in 2002. The men's and women's swimming teams moved up to Division I in 2008. The move leaves UND athletics with 18 programs. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:40.
I'm behind the mic tonight here in St. Paul, Minnesota, for our national call-in show on the first 100 days of the Trump presidency. We call it Indivisible. I hope you'll listen and you'll call in. Tonight, we talk about how faith informs our political identity. 7 o'clock. I'll see you there. Programming supported by the Guthrie's World Stage Series, presenting Peter Brook's Battlefield. Based on the Mahabharata, this critically acclaimed production explores the immeasurable costs of victory after war. 11 performances only, beginning April 13th. Tickets at GuthrieTheater.org. Back to our conversation now with our guests Michael Hurley and Amanda Turkle. And on Twitter here, Mira says, "I'm baffled by the disappointed Trump voters, I think including our last caller. The man is exactly who he told us and showed us he was. What did you expect?" To the phones to Tom in Montevideo. Hey, Tom, thank you for waiting.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing Michael, well. Yeah, what are you thinking about?
Michael, I like your comments. I really do. Here's my situation that bothers me, is this stuff with Putin and Trump is all hearsay and innuendos. If they had proof, boom, they'd have proof. It'd be done. He'd be out. Move on. What gets me is they have proof that Hillary sold, what was it, uranium or plutonium, whatever it is, illegally to Russia. Nothing was done. They have proof that dead Democratic people voted for Hillary. They're not doing anything with that. They have proof that she has illegal emails. They have proof that she actually...
Tom, may I just say that we, Tom, I just have to say this. We have a lot of people waiting. I don't want to redo the election. I think we have the essence of what you're asking. If you want to summarize it, go ahead, or I'm going to go back to Michael on this.
Okay, my thing is this. We're spending a lot of money and time with the FBI over hearsay and innuendos.
Okay.
They have proof of Hillary's situations. Why don't they spend their time and money better spent going after the real thing? Not
Michael, is it hearsay and innuendo, these allegations about Russia's interference?
Well, I think there has been a lot of hearsay and innuendo, and that's because there's so much interest in this and lots of different articles and people with different opinions, and there certainly is a fair amount of that. And leaks have been kind of selective. But again, I get back to the fundamental thing, which is there is an ongoing FBI investigation delving into this question of possible collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. And go back to what a director of the FBI, James Comey, said 10 or 12 days ago at his hearing. And he basically he said that this investigation is underway. It has been going on since late July. He also said that it takes a long time to conduct these investigations, so it could go on indefinitely. He refused to give kind of an endpoint for it. But I think it's important to bear in mind that the FBI doesn't undertake these matters frivolously. It has had to meet a standard of sort of basic evidence to launch this investigation and to pursue it. And so the fact is, we don't know. We simply don't know. I think this is very important, what the FBI has so far or it doesn't have. All the rest is just sort of speculation. Every once in a while, there's a leak of partial information that may or may not be accurate, that may or may not be some leaker's agenda, personal agenda. But the underlying fact is that there is an investigation, that that investigation has to meet certain standards to even be launched, basically, and it's ongoing. So that is not hearsay. That's a fact. But we don't know what it's produced, if anything, up to this point. We just know that there's enough there for the investigation to be continuing.
Amanda, I want to say something about what Tom, our caller, said about Hillary Clinton, too, because we don't. There isn't proof. We don't know about the uranium. And I don't want to get into, because I don't think we're going to change minds. If you believe that, there's lots of information out there to tell you why that isn't true. But I think the way he put that speaks to, again, this polarization and kind of the silos we're in the news we consume and the things we believe.
Yes, Donald Trump is not the only one out there who doesn't necessarily accept information that doesn't fit with the views that they already hold. That's why we saw, for example, fake news pick up so much during the election. There are people out there who admitted that their sites are completely fake. They write things and because they know that people will share them, and there's no basis to those whatsoever. And we saw this come to sort of a terrible real-life conclusion when a person with a gun went to a pizza place in Washington, D.C., actually pretty close to my house, because he thought that there was a pedophile ring operating out of this pizza place. And there was no proof. It was just a fake news story. And so, you know, that is it is troubling that there are people out there who are so susceptible to this information and that it then spreads on social media like real news. And meanwhile, you have Donald Trump sort of promoting this whole fake news concept by whenever he sees some news report out there from a legitimate news organization that he doesn't like, he just calls it fake news.
And so far, many of his supporters believe that. But as I said, you can't fight. I don't think we can necessarily change minds. I think it's our role to, you know, have people like Michael Hurley on to say, this is what we know, and this is how you should understand this, and then take that information and do with it what you will. That's kind of the key. Let me grab a call here from Ilhan in Minneapolis. Hi, good morning. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I was a Trump voter, and I am extremely disappointed in him thus far. I did not realize how susceptible I was to the fake news that you just mentioned, because I did read a lot of those articles, and I believed that they were true until I, you know, understood more that maybe they weren't as true as they were supposed to be. And I would say I voted for him because I thought that he would stir up things in government. He would change things. And I overlooked his faults, a lot of his faults, because I thought, well, okay, you know, give him a chance. Maybe he'll do something different for us. But I don't think that's the case. And the longer he's been in office, the more I'm questioning everything he says. More I'm questioning, like, whether his tweets and whether those things are true. I mean, I wanted to vote for someone who I thought would make a change for us as Americans, and I wanted good changes, not necessarily the changes that I see that he's doing now. And I'm just, he's not the negotiator that he said he was, he was. So I'm really disappointed myself.
Michael, I will say it's early days here. We're only 60-something days in. But I also think it might be valuable, Michael, if you would say something about where to find as much information, objective information as possible as an average American voter trying to figure out what is true and what isn't, on some of these intelligence issues. Do you see what I'm asking?
People, I think one of the problems that we have today, just kind of the voting public in general, is that news tends to be, and news agencies tend to be so fragmented that people can just go to whatever source they like and that agrees with views that they already have or their political leanings. And I think that's a problem that we all face. So I think it's important to sort of break out of that and then try to get your news sourcing from, you know, sort of the people that actually sort of deal in facts. And reporters do make mistakes. And some of the great newspapers do make mistakes. Hopefully they correct them. I try to get my information from reporters that I have come to respect because of the factual nature of their reporting. One of the sources that I really like, especially on these complicated, and they are very complicated, national security issues, the rules involving wiretapping. We haven't yet talked, Carrie, about the minimizing that goes on when there are intercepts and there's an American citizen that gets rolled up incidentally in an intercept. Those rules are complicated, and you've got to try to find people that can explain them well. Someone I think who is really, really good at this is Charlie Savage, who does national security issues and understands the law very well and writes for the New York Times. That's somebody that I pay attention to when he reports on these sorts of things. So, and we have to have, I think, confidence in our intelligence community, imperfect as it is, and given the mistakes that it's made, certainly there have been many of them. But we have a system set up where we have congressional oversight. And when that congressional oversight is strong of the NSA and CIA and our entire intelligence community, that's a really positive thing. And I sort of fear that given some of the politics that have entered into, especially on the House Intelligence Committee side, that kind of breaks that down and erodes confidence.
Definitely.
So we have to strive to get that back.
Yeah. If you've just gotten in on the conversation and you heard that, Michael Hurley, one of our guests, he's a former CIA officer and currently the president of Team 3i. And Amanda Turkle is with us. She's a senior political reporter for The Huffington Post. Amanda, I want to ask you something about this. This goes back to the president's agenda and getting Neil Gorsuch confirmed for the U.S. Supreme Court. There is now talk that this nominee may have a hard time getting to 60 votes. That doesn't mean that he won't get confirmed by the Senate if they change up the rules. But I'd like you to listen to something that Minnesota Senator Al Franken said this morning on our Morning Edition program.
We had our hearings, and I came to the conclusion I don't want him. According to a study published by the University of Minnesota, the Roberts Court is the most pro-corporate court since World War II. And it just seems like he'd be the fifth vote to continue that way of ruling, and I don't want him on there.
Amanda, does it matter if he doesn't get to 60? Because they still can get him confirmed, can't they?
Well, they could change the rules, but, I mean, Republicans have been, you know, they were very critical when Democrats changed the rules for lower court judges and other nominees. Back when Harry Reid was the Democratic leader. So I think, you know, a lot of people in the Senate are institutionalists and don't like messing with the institution much. And so, you know, you're not in power forever. So if you do change the rules to get Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, when Democrats are back in power and there's a Supreme Court opening, they'll be able to get their person through a lot easier. So Republicans, I think, really have to evaluate whether or not they want to do this, or whether they're willing to try to work with Democrats, see if they can pick off a few Democrats, or just maybe wait a little farther. I mean, you know, part of the problem is that Republicans angered Democrats so much when they refused to confirm Merrick Garland, who
right.
President Obama put forward when Justice Scalia passed away. And they claimed that they wanted to wait till after the election. They tried to come up with reasons that this was constitutionally better. But, you know, Democrats are still remember that and are still very upset about it, which is part of the reason they're so opposed to Gorsuch.
But I mean, there's also strategy here, Amanda, right? Because if they use this, if they resist on Gorsuch, who knows who the next nominee may be? And isn't that where maybe they want to coalesce their resistance around? Because if the rumors are right, Anthony Kennedy may be considering retiring.
Yes, that is part of the strategy, but I think a lot of Democrats, and especially members of the base, are really skeptical about that. You know, if Democrats cut some sort of deal where they say, okay, fine, we'll let Gorsuch through this time, but the next one, we want to have a say. You know, it seems
risky.
Like, you know, Democrats are taken for a bit of a ride, and I think the base would be pretty upset.
Call here from Josh for you, Michael, in Eden Prairie. Hi, Josh. What's your question?
Hi. About Sally Yates, if she, the legality of her being barred from speaking to the hearings,
mm-hmm.
and after the hearings were canceled, if she's ever going to come back and speak again about Michael Flynn or, you know.
Yeah, if they're going to get some answers about that. She, Michael, for our listeners, was the acting attorney general who was fired by President Trump.
Yeah, she was a career federal prosecutor at the Department of Justice, and then President Obama appointed her to be deputy attorney general, and then she was acting attorney general during the transition period. I think there has been a number of cancellations this week. The House Intelligence Committee canceled a few hearings that were scheduled. It's unclear what the reasons for that were. We can speculate. But I have, as we start off the program, Carrie, talking about the Senate Intelligence Committee, I do have a pretty good degree of confidence in the leadership of the Republican senator and chairman of that committee, Richard Burr, and the Democratic senator, Mark Warner, as the ranking member. I particularly liked when they said that, and they said it together, and I do think bipartisanship is so important on these highly contentious issues, when they said that their committee will conduct its investigation and go wherever the intelligence and facts lead them. And I think that's really key. I would look, getting back to Sally Yates, I would look to that committee to invite her to a hearing and hear what she has to say. So I think that will take place.
Michael, really good to have you on the show. Thank you so much for making time for us while you're in London. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Carrie. Thank you.
Michael Hurley is a former CIA officer and now head of an international strategy company. Amanda, a quick question for you. And I assume these investigations, these committee investigations, are going to grind on for a while. What happens when they, at some point, they present a report, right? They make a conclusion. Then what happens?
At some point, they do submit a report, and what will be interesting to see is what President Trump, how he responds to that. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean the end of anything. We saw this with the Benghazi investigations. There was investigation after investigation after investigation, and Republicans weren't happy when an investigation would say that there was nothing there, that Hillary wasn't directly responsible. And so there were more investigations. And so I don't know what will happen. I think we have to see what conclusions they make and what Donald Trump tries to tweet in response. But yes, at some point, these should wrap up, but we don't know when.
And we don't know if that will, you know, spur any action or change any minds or but we've got, it sounds like, some weeks to see what happens on this, because they will not move quickly on this, will they?
No, they're not going to move quickly. They have, you know, the Senate has said that it wants to do, you know, quite a few interviews. The House Intelligence Committee doesn't really seem to be moving forward because they can't come to any sort of agreement. So it's going to be a while.
Okay. Really good to have you on the show, Amanda. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Amanda Turkle is Huffington Post senior political reporter with us this morning from Washington, D.C. Okay, tonight, I'm behind the mic for Indivisible, and we're talking about, as you know, I tackle on Thursday nights identity, American identity, who we think we are in these times of change and political polarization. Tonight, I'm talking about how our idea of faith, our connection to a faith community or not, influences the way we think of our own identity, particularly our political identity. Happens at 7 o'clock tonight. Krista Tippett's one of my guests. We are going to open the phone lines, call early, call often, because the phone lines get jammed almost from the minute we go on the air. So I'd love to hear from you if you're listening tonight at 7. If you miss the show, you can find it on the podcast. Just search NPR News with Carrie Miller on the podcast, or go to Indivisible Radio to look for it.